League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Have you seen this Malik Hooker, Micah Parsons drama? Malik Hooker is a Cowboy, Dallas Cowboy. Micah Parsons is a Dallas Cowboy. We know that Micah Parsons likes to podcast. In fact, some people were talking about how C.J. Stroud's been talking too much. There was a whole lot of shut up and throw the football when it came to C.J. Stroud a few weeks ago. I heard it on this very station. Shut up and throw the football. Micah Parsons does a bunch of podcasting. Malik Hooker has noticed. Malik Hooker on Micah Parsons and his podcast via another podcast said that if the run game is terrible and you're doing a podcast every week, what are you really caring about? So he's like, okay, you're professional. And it's a little different. I mean, Parsons hosting a podcast where Malik Hooker's a guest. There's a difference there. And Parsons is committed to doing it each and every week while Hooker's, you know, a guest and could say, no, I don't want to come on your podcast. But what do you make of that comment from Malik Hooker talking about, hey, look, if we're really bad this year and you're still doing this weekly podcast, what is your priority? What is your motive?
I think it's a slippery slope, especially for a guy that's not as impactful as a Micah Parsons. When you look at that team and you really got to feel like, you know, and check yourself in terms of your stability and, you know, how comfortable you just got trying to reprimand your best defensive player and one of the best defensive players in this league, because you're setting yourself up to possibly be scrutinized and more. You're setting yourself up to already go into a season and you haven't got to training camp yet, and you could have issues within your own locker room culture because of the fact that you're a little concerned about what your teammates doing in the offseason. And I think that it's kind of like the old unwritten rule that we've seen throughout sports, and particularly in football, and as recent as Baker Mayfield, when contract situations come up, don't worry about another man's money. Don't worry about another man and what he's doing in his free time outside of football. And I don't think he's really said too much. I know that what Parsons has said previously has evidently ruffled the feathers of management in Dallas with the Jones family, because he said, we're in go-for-it mode and what have we really done?
Mm-hmm.
But is he wrong? You know, and is it one of the best players? Sure, you should voice that internally behind closed doors to the owners first. We don't know if he has or not, but everybody has a platform these days. And with the platform that he has, if that's the route that he chooses to take, you really, you know, you got to be careful in how much you're going to try and be, you know, criticizing someone else, because there's going to be other guys on your team that are doing it if they aren't already.
I don't love the medium he chose to deliver this message. I don't disagree with his take, though. Like Micah Parsons' response to the comments, just wish you said this to me, but instead on some podcast, why aren't we talking about everyone preparations and focus leading up to the game week, ? I mean, I can point out a lot of other things, but I'm just not. So the medium that he chose to deliver the message, I agree with you, that's poor. I think that was a bit Bush League. But I don't necessarily disagree with the take, because if your job is to be like the best football player you can be, is the podcast at all interfering with that? Probably not, but it's the perception of it. It's the perception of it. You're bottom 10 run defense in the NFL, where we started off 2-6, and you're still over there like having fun doing your podcast each and every week. That's not a great look to the rest of the team. So I see where Malik Hooker is coming from here. At the same time, like, he's doing a podcast 1 hour a week, not that big a deal. But it does have a very bad look if you're struggling. Fortunately, Micah Parsons hasn't had a whole lot of struggle in his career, and the team has been good while he's been there.
And that's what I was going to say. The main thing is that, you know, as long as he's backing it up by, you know, when Hooker sees him, not necessarily the media and or the general public, if he's in there putting in work in the weight room, if he's in there and he's not showing up late and leaving early and doing, you know, things that you don't want your best players, let alone any of your players, to do, and he's putting in the effort, you know what kind of football player he is, then okay, you do you, bro. Then whatever you're going to do in your spare time, fine. Now, at a certain point, I would hope that all these guys, no matter what they're doing in their off seasons and on these podcasts, kind of reevaluate in season when the grind becomes obviously taken up several notches.
Josh Seabrook, if it's during the offseason, I wouldn't mind if a player's doing a podcast. I have no issue really there. 4071, man, I'm a Cowboys lifer, so it's a hard knock life. That being said, Parsons has done exactly nothing when it counts. He's real fast and extremely capable, but does that earn you top pay? Hope they improve, but I have zero postseason expectations. From Jerry's kids.
That's harsh.
It is. And really had nothing to do with what we were talking about, no, other than the subjects that we're discussing. The Draymond Green stuff annoys me. Like, when Draymond Green has, like, he gets ejected from a game, or if he gets into a scuffle from the game, he immediately runs to his podcast and starts discussing it. Like, that does rub me the wrong way. If he was a Rocket and was doing that stuff, like, I would be pretty critical of that, I believe.
I think that he's trying to profit from something that has been basically a rule in the league that you have to talk in the locker room when you're still attached to the NBA, and he's taking it to a platform where he's trying to cash in. So he's not going to say as much in the locker room, and he's going to direct everybody like a Pat Beverly move, and that whole debacle of are you subscribed to my podcast? Now that players realize it's not just a fun little hobby to have in the offseason that you can cash in and make some coin on it, you're getting more players to do it. They, in order to get the clicks, they're getting more controversial. They're ruffling a lot more feathers. Look, I agree with you. And whether it's working for a team and caring that much or just caring about your favorite team, the last thing you really want is anything that can screw up the culture and screw up the relationships and screw up a good thing when it's going in the right direction with any team in any sport. And these kind of things can do that. And we've seen in the past where it can create a divide between whether it's your best player or just players in the locker room, and it can cause you some problems that you really don't want and don't need. Like from the CJ Stroud perspective, the same way. The kid's spreading his wings a little bit. He's doing the same things Micah Parsons doing, and he's able to do that and get more attention because of the season he had previously, and now because he's established himself as a premier-type player in this league. What I don't like is I don't want to ruffle the feathers of an Aaron Rodgers or some of the players that I know really feed off that kind of stuff to give them any extra motivation to play the Texans this year, because they got enough on their plate with what they got to handle with their schedule and everything else with it. I don't need to give them any extra.
Yeah, I think that stuff's overrated. Like giving a professional player bulletin board material because he might try harder. Like I question that guy's motive or motivation to begin with, if that's what it requires. But maybe some guys are that way.
I mean, I've seen it a lot, and it's not just like the whole Jordan thing that they highlighted in the doc, or things with other people. I mean, I've seen it with players, and I've seen it with opposing players. With the Warriors, when the Rockets and the Warriors were going back and forth, and Harden did some things to really tick off Steph and Clay and Draymond, and they used it, and they wanted to bury him,
they not already want to bury him though, especially in the playoffs?
They took it to a different level. Let's just say that when they were up 20, they were trying to get it up 30, and they were rubbing it in and trying to do it.
That's different then. Like they had already won the game. Like. If they're rubbing, like pouring salt in the wound, like whatever, like, okay, now you're getting a little bit personal or whatever. And it can also work the other way. Like it can rattle you in a negative way where you're too zealous, you're too over aggressive. It could go both ways.
It can. But I think that when you're talking about if it gives you your best players, whether they need it or not, if it gives them that extra motivation and focus, then I think you don't need to. I know that like Rudy T and Carroll Dawson were guys that were hell-bent on trying to avoid any bulletin board material at any time and like pouncing on trying to, you know, squelch it whenever it happened because they really put a lot of weight in that and everybody's different. But I think that, like I said, in the last dance, you saw it, that Jordan was actually creating his own at a certain point to motivate himself.
So it didn't even exist. Like, no one even had to say anything to Jordan because Jordan was going to motivate himself.
The Pistons, but did.
Like, Jordan's the opposite, though. Like Jordan didn't, like, it didn't matter if you said something in the paper or not because Jordan was literally going to create something because he was self-motivated. Like, the greats are self-motivated. He was creating things that weren't even said. What do you mean
he
was self-motivated?
For it. Whether he created it or not, if he didn't have to create it, he was looking for it. So if you gave him that so that he didn't have to create something and you gave him that extra motivation, then he was going to bump it up a notch, that he was going to dial in a little bit more laser-focused. Coaches...
Well, the Pistons had the Jordan rules, and he couldn't beat them for 2 years.
I mean, he also had to build the right team, and get the right team around him. I think he was going to do everything that he possibly could. But I think that it definitely works in the favor of the opponent sometime if you fire them up.
Yeah, I don't put a whole lot of stock into it. Agree to disagree there. Mm-hmm. Malik Hooker definitely said what probably has been thought in that locker room. Certainly Malik Hooker thought that. So who would be the one Texan that you would want Malik Hooker to deliver, not necessarily this message, but a harsh reality to?
Well, to me, I think the obvious choice for a lot of people is going to be CJ, because he does the whole thing, the podcast with Parsons, and they like to go back and forth at each other. But I'm fine with CJ being, that's who a quarterback is. And we've seen it through quarterbacks throughout the years. To me, the guy that my first thought was Diggs. I want to make sure that Diggs is harmonious with this locker room all season long. I'm not saying he said anything. I'm not saying that, he's using a podcast, or I don't even know if he does a consistent podcast. But he's the guy that I'm worried about most in terms of going and using an avenue like a podcast or something else that could possibly start messing with the good culture of this locker room.
I'm not really worried about Diggs to the media. Like, most of the stuff that he's been, I don't even know how to say this, controversial about have usually been sideline antics. I think he handles the media pretty good. Like, I don't know of any media or behind the mic appearance that Stephon Diggs was at all controversial. And maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on his one press conference that he's had with the Texans where he was, really, really good, I thought. For me, it's Titus Howard. It's pretty easily Titus Howard for me. And the message that I would have Malik Hooker tell Titus Howard is, hey, you have too much screen time. You're a professional football player. Why don't you stop playing as much video games and hanging out on Twitter? Like, go play football, work out, and be your very best. That dude is behind a monitor all the time. Like, he is hopping in people's Twitter comments all the time. People have told me that he's, blocked people that he plays video games with. Like, and if, you want to do that, cool, but maybe don't make it so loud. Because if you're that loud on social media and you're playing that many video games and doing all this, what is the message that sends to your bosses? What did we hear about Kyler Murray? Mm-hmm. He spends too much time playing Call of Duty instead of being in his playbook. Okay, well, you're scrolling all the time on Twitter, hopping in people's comments and playing video games all the time. Let's put down the screen, or at least pretend like we're putting down the screen. That's what I would have Malik Hooker tell a Houston Texan.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, from my regard, as it regards to my choice of Diggs, it's just because of the fact that it's not going to help him out any, and because the Texans cared about it enough to basically restructure his contract just to make sure if there were any issues that they had a shorter leash in terms of being able to get rid of him if they needed to. I think he, hopefully, in a new situation, knowing that he's trying to get a new contract, won't be that guy. But my concern is the way it kind of spilled over from the sidelines, and whether it created any real conflict or not between him and Allen, or they're just going to say the right things in the media. I don't need that this year with this team.
713-780-ESPN. What would your message to a Houston Texan be that's being delivered by Malik Hooker? 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line 713-780-3776. Who are the five most overrated quarterbacks in the NFL right now? Who are the most overrated quarterbacks in the NFL? What's your top five? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Who are the most, we'll do the most underrated tomorrow, but who are the most overrated quarterbacks in the NFL? Top five. I saw this with Houston Stressons. That's what inspired me to do our very own. So who are your most five, or your five most overrated quarterbacks in the NFL?
When I think about it, and it just depends on what you think they have left or not, but I think that the two that really come to mind first and foremost are Russell Wilson and Derek Carr, because they got massive deals. They continue to fail, and even if they're traded for in the case of New Orleans or Pittsburgh is giving him one more chance with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, to me, is just not even close to what he used to be. And the fact that the Broncos did what they did was absolutely stupid. And you just can't play okay and decent for a guy that's, Russell Wilson and being acquired with all that they gave up with Denver. Same thing with Carr. I mean, Carr was good with the Raiders. He was not very good with the Saints. I don't have any faith that he's going to be better this year with the Saints. So I think that they're both on the list for me. Trevor Lawrence is a guy that comes to mind immediately as well because he just got the massive deal. And I'm like, I've never been overly impressed with Trevor Lawrence. You know, good on him that he got his money. But I think that Jacksonville kind of panicked and did what they had to do for trying to save the franchise and marketing and all the other things non-football related. And I don't see him becoming the kind of guy that when you're the number one overall pick in the draft that a lot of people see him to be. And I want to, you know, I think I'm going to put Jordan Love on the list because of the fact that I still have to see a whole lot more from a guy that may get the bag before I think I've seen enough. And that worries me. I watch too much of that, those games and too much of his tape to know that he has not shown me the kind of things that I've seen in the top 5 to 7 quarterbacks in this league. His ability to put the ball in tight windows, his ability to make key throws at key times. So it's not like I'm not hopeful that it happens. It's just a very scary proposition to where I could see him regressing this year and fading and coming back. And then the other guy that I would put on the list, and he did a little to dispel that last year, but Baker Mayfield's a guy that's never, to me, lived up to billing when he came out and as high as he was drafted. And just when you think that he has the capability, he can win you a football game, he can win you a bad division, but for the money he's making too, and take money out of it, just where he was supposed to be to what he's turned out to be, I don't think Baker's been nearly what everybody thought he was going to be.
Yeah, I'll push back on a couple of those. I think higher of Jordan Love than you. Although some of the talk on Jordan Love is kind of crazy right now. Like they were talking about it the other day. I saw tweets about it. How people would start their franchise with Jordan Love. Like that's extreme. That's extreme. So I could see why that's overrated. Wilson and Carr, I don't think are rated enough to be overrated, quite frankly. Maybe like Wilson's heyday, maybe Carr's heyday. I think at this stage of their career, no one's really rating Wilson or Carr that high. Like no one's talking about them in like glowing terms. So I wouldn't have them overrated.
Their contract and what they've done.
Yeah. That's the other contract, certainly.
Yeah, because they're massive.
Really, yeah, they haven't lived under their contract, that's for sure. My top five, reverse order. Number five for me is Justin Herbert. And I love Justin Herbert's game. Sorry, Buchanan. But the guy doesn't win. Like, the guy doesn't go to the playoffs and win football games. And a lot of times we crush these guys for getting, you know, not having postseason success. Justin Herbert, to me, has a ton of talent. I think he should have been drafted higher. But until you win a playoff game or two, I got to put you as one of the most overrated quarterbacks in the NFL. People talk about Herbert as having the most talent of anybody else in the league, yet he does nothing in the postseason. So Justin Herbert, number five. Number four is Anthony Richardson. And I think Richardson has a chance to be really good. But Anthony Richardson is always hurt. Like, when was the last time Anthony Richardson played a full, healthy season? People are, well, you're an idiot. Brandon's only his second year in the NFL. Go look at his career. Go look at his football-playing career and tell me when Anthony Richardson has started a season and has finished a season and has been healthy throughout. So for me, it's mostly the injury stuff with Anthony Richardson. Plus, I still have questions about his accuracy. Yes, I like that he landed with Shane Steichen, but we're acting like Anthony Richardson's a top-10 quarterback and he's played like in 3 NFL games with huge question marks surrounding Anthony Richardson. Three for me is Tua. I think Tua's overrated. Tua has incredible talent around him and solid numbers. Okay, good numbers, but even Miami's reluctant to give him huge quarterback money. Why? Because Tua's not in that conversation. Tua's not in the elite with the rest of those guys. Number two, overrated quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. Lawrence, kind of the same thing I was saying about Herbert. Lawrence was lucky to win that game where neither team deserved to win in the playoffs. Lawrence, another guy who puts the ball on the ground a lot. Go look at his fumble numbers. They're insane how much Trevor Lawrence puts the ball on the ground. I hate quarterbacks that are turnover prone. One of the most important things a quarterback can do is protect the football. You can't score. You can't move the ball if you don't have the ball. So I put a whole lot of weight when it comes to that. Thus, number one, most overrated quarterback in the NFL is the guy who will never win a Super Bowl. The very one and only Josh Allen, who people think is like a top three quarterback. I would argue he is the most overrated quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I kind of figured he was going to show up on your list at some point. Same way we've talked about with other guys, I feel differently about Josh Allen just because, yes, he can turn the ball over, but he has the dynamic that he brings with the running game and all the things he can do, and he's got a cannon. We see it a little bit differently. I think that their team obviously means a lot. They've taken a step back on a personnel platform to where I just don't think he's going to have the opportunity, especially next season, to chase a Super Bowl. Maybe they get him some more help down the road, but I'm not going to take that off his possible chances of winning a Super Bowl. But, I understand, to your point, he is turnover prone, and then that is a risky proposition. I like Herbert a lot. I really believe in Herbert, and I think that he's got a real head coach now, and we know that coaching can matter too. But, yes, I understand that he hasn't been able to win. That was a debacle last year for both quarterbacks, but of the two guys, I believe more in Herbert than I do in Lawrence.
I do. I like Herbert's skill set more than I like Lawrence. I think he protects the ball a little bit more. One thing that really hurts Herbert is I think their philosophy is going to be very run oriented, so the numbers I think for Herbert are going to go down.
That's possible,
but it doesn't really influence like who he is as a quarterback. I would take Herbert higher than Lawrence if I were having a quarterback draft. 6444 says Tua, Herbert, Hurts, Dak, Lawrence. 6005 says Dak for sure. 5961, no Dak on either overrated list. This is why I think Dak's actually appropriately rated. I think Dak gets a lot of hate that he's actually kind of like rated like how he should be. Dak takes a lot of heat, and I think Dak's actually better than the heat that he takes.
And I think the same way that Kirk Cousins takes the heat that he takes, they take it because of the postseason. But of the two guys, when you look at what the numbers that Dak puts up in the regular season, he does his job, and he does it really, really well. He was in the MVP conversation in a couple of the years, in the previous couple of years, because of the fact he can lead the league in passing. He can do some things to really take notice. But when the games matter most and everybody's paying the most attention, he doesn't win. He doesn't win the big games. The same way we're just talking about Herbert, and Kirk Cousins has always been known as a guy that can do a hell of a lot of good things in the regular season, but he can't get it done in the playoffs. Dak's right there with him.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We'll do the most underrated tomorrow. Cash them or trash them with the Bees. What do you want to cash? What do you want to trash? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash 'em.
That is so good, but that's exactly right.
Or Trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a killer bee.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
6860, Dak falls into the same category that you use for Josh Allen, Brenham. Josh Allen has thrown 78 interceptions in 94 games in his career. Dak has thrown 74 interceptions in 114 games. And he's been in the league like 3 years longer. 4 years, actually. But he's had that injury year where he only played five. And Josh Allen, again, in far fewer games, has fumbled the ball more times than Dak Prescott has in his career. One turns it over far more than the other turns it over. All right, 713-780-3776. What do you want us to cash? What do you want us to trash? 713-780-3776. Blankers, what is your cash or trash?
I'm going to start with the fact that the team that beat the Astros in the opening series that everybody's been overhyping, the New York Yankees, are not only going to not make the ALCS, the New York Yankees aren't going to win their own division, and they are going to be in a dogfight in a wild card in the American League come playoff time.
The Mariners?
No, the Yankees.
Oh, the Yankees will be in a crapshoot?
Yeah. I don't think they're going to win the division. I think Baltimore will. I don't think that they're going to hold up, and with all the injuries that they always seem to have, and Stanton gets hurt again, and everybody goes down, and as much as they put all their eggs with Soto and Judge and all the big numbers that they put up, I just see a team that is flailing around as good as they've been, and I don't think they're going to win the division. I don't think they're going to get to the American League Championship Series.
Didn't they do that a few years ago where they started off as like the hottest team in baseball, and they were like on this 115 win pace, and then they were awful the rest of the way? I don't remember if they missed the playoffs entirely, but they were ousted.
That might have been when Boone was on the hot seat after that.
I feel like that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, like that might have been. I don't recall it per se, but I know that Boone found himself kind of quickly on the hot seat.
The Yankees went 60-23 to start the 2022 season. So they won 60 of their first 83 games.
They were on fire this year too.
Yeah. I want to see how the Yankees finished up. Was that I think it was the year the Astros beat the Yankees. I think it was the year they swept them, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, they started off red hot. Then they were swept by the Astros in the ALCS. I see them going with that same plight. I like where your mind is at on this one. I can see that as well. I think there's some questions with that Yankees team. I don't see them missing the playoffs entirely. I agree they won't win the division. But the wild card's got some mediocrity to it, more in the NL than the AL. But like Kansas City right now is your third wild card team. They are five and a half games back of the Yankees. Actually, they're 7 games back of the Yankees. So Yankees are 7 clear on Kansas City. But even if they flip spots with Kansas City, they're still not out of the playoffs. They're 8.5 games up on Boston, who is their, you know, the first team out of the wild card right now. Then it's the Astros, actually. I won't say they'll miss the playoffs.
No, I didn't say they'll miss
the playoffs. But they'll lose the division.
I think they're going to be in a dogfight in the wild card because I think, like, if Minnesota is who they play, and if Minnesota's healthy, and that's a big if because one of their best players can't stay healthy, and Correa obviously got hit a week or so ago, and injuries happen. But I think Minnesota has better pitching than they've had in the past. I think Minnesota could give them a handful.
In the race?
In the playoffs.
Yeah, I'll cash this. Yeah. I'll cash this one. Be right. Give me a cash on that one. 713-780-3776. What do you want us to cash or what do you want us to trash? Nick Wright had a take yesterday. My semi-annual reminder that across the board in every sport, replay review has made the product worse and has not improved accuracy at all, and it should all be done away with, except for tennis, where it seems to be good. It worked truly flawlessly. My take is the opposite of this, and I've said this for years. I think that more things should be reviewable, quite frankly, like the Altuve foul ball off his foot, and that it should not require clear and conclusive evidence. I think we should go one step further with instant replay to where now the instant replay is the ultimate trump card over the call on the field. Once a play is challenged, I think we should forget about the call on the field altogether. You go over to the video monitor and you make your best guess based on what you see on slow-mo replay. You're going to tell me that these aging umpires, referees, officials have a better view and a better look than slow-mo, high-definition, instant replay. Why in the world is the call on the field the trump card? Why does that one hold the highest sanctity of the call? When it should be what is on the slow-mo replay. They should get the best look that they can get, and then after getting the best look that they can get, you go based on what you saw on the video replay, and you forget the call on the field entirely.
I'll cash this. I'll cash it immediately because I've long said, and the NBA took a step back with the way that they used to do it versus how they do it now, where you have to save your challenges like a wild card in your back pocket, and if you're wrong, you're going to lose it. The object of every sport and every official is, at the end of the day, get the call right. Make sure the game is decided the right way by the players on the playing field, and leave it at that. The reason why that they go to the point you're making about what was the call on the field or on the court, it's because they don't want to hurt their officials' feelings because of the fact that these officials have such a tough job to do, and they do, but sometimes they're going to miss things. But at the end of the day, if the end result is truly get the call right, then anything that is even is remotely challengeable should be challenged. To get the call right, I'm not worried about, especially with everybody bitches in baseball, it takes too long. The idea is to get the call right on the field, so I'm all for it.
Yeah. Okay. And there's a better, you're going to get more calls right based on slow-mo, high-def replay than the call on the field has to be conclusive and obvious to overturn. 9666, umpire's ego will never let the replay make the decision. I don't care about the umpire's feelings or ego.
If they're trying to take control of the strike zone, which the umpires have grossly mismanaged over the years based on their feelings, and they're close to doing that, think about the Altuve, because that's definitely going to get to the competition committee, and that better be changed by next season. Because if you think about it, if you know we're going to go to replay right away, then they're going to go as quickly as they can and get the look at the reviews and get the thing done. It'll take a lot less time than have the manager on the field, the player on the field, the umpires meeting, that player thrown out, and then at the end of the day, you don't get the call right. You should do it and have it. They should change that as soon as possible.
Yeah. 8532, cash your trash. Anthony, this is Colt fan. Richardson will play the whole year and be top 5 quarterback in passing yards.
That will be trashed.
Trash.
I don't think he's a good enough passer to be top 5 in passing yards. There's no way I see that happen. Plus, I don't think he's going to stay healthy all year.
Which one of the two is the bigger trash?
Ooh, I'm going to say the pass. Just that he's going to finish top 5.
I think the bigger trash is the opposite. I think there's more of a chance he misses. He finishes the whole year. All 17 games. Right. He's not playing all 17 games.
But even if he did, I don't think I'm going to sit there and rattle off quarterbacks before and have go a long way before you say, "Oh, there's a guy that he can have more passing yards than."
Double entendre trash for that one. Sure. Both takes, Colt fan, lands on the trash bin. Richardson playing the whole year, trash. Top five quarterback in passing yards, trash, Colt fan. That's why Anthony Richardson's number four in my top five most underrated quarterbacks going into the 2024 season.
Top five rushing yards?
In the NFL? Mm-hmm. No.
No, for quarterback. For quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's in play.
I think that's in play, too.
Yeah, I think that's in play. Now, I will concede that Anthony Richardson landing with Shane Steichen was the perfect scenario for him. I will concede that, Colt fan. I will concede, too, that if Anthony Richardson does play a full year, that he'll be really, really good. My take on Anthony Richardson is more about injury than performance. 3270, the Lakers taking Bronny is kissing LeBron's bad words so bad that it makes it the best case. Find best. A best case of nepotism of all time.
I would say that there's plenty of others that...
I don't know.
Well, but see, the things that I'm thinking about are more like ownership, like the Buss family. The fact that Johnny Buss became a general manager, assistant general manager, and was making personnel decisions because his dad owned the team was pretty embarrassing.
I mean, it's on par, though. I think it's on par. Like, LeBron James is taking one of 15, or Bronny James is going to take one of 15 roster spots on an NBA team where there's only 30 of them. Mm-hmm. He's also, like, they signed him today to, like, a fully guaranteed deal, which is, like, unheard of second rounders, that he's going to start the year on the NBA roster. I mean, this is a very, there's a great story. I love the storyline. But this is one of the biggest nepotism cases we've ever seen.
Can't Giannis be in there too then? Because both of his brothers.
Yes.
And Theonis, however you say it, he is awful. And
I think he might be better than Bronny, though.
I don't think so.
I don't know, man.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
He is awful. And every time he gets in a Bucks game, it gets worse.
I think there's, like, an elite level of nepotism. I think you ring up a good one. Double Rod says, like, Tillman's son. Double Rod says, like, Crane's son. Junior Bronco says, like, Cal McNair.
I've heard Patrick Fertitta is a sharp guy.
I've heard that as well. Yes. I've heard that he's
very
sharp.
I don't know
if
he's got the basketball acumen to be able to analyze players yet. He's trying to work up. But I knew from a very, very quickly when Tillman bought the team that he's the heir apparent on the business side, too, which means you got to be sharp.
Yeah. I mean, it's a classic case of nepotism, but you're right. Like, we've seen tons of nepotism before. This is unique to basketball. You bring up the next closest example, I think. I think that would be the next closest nepotism example, the Greek Freak.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Greek not-so-freaky.
Remember now, both brothers had some time in the league.
Yeah.
And then the one brother went overseas again because he's actually playing. And the Bucks, rightfully so, if you want to keep your star happy, give contract after contract to his brother.
3209, catch this. Astros go 95-67.
Where are they now?
They're 43-41.
43-41.
43-41. What do you say? 95 wins?
So they got to go
52
and
25.
20, I don't think so.
52 and 25?
I think they
so
get
it's 52 and 77 games.
Yeah.
That's a win percentage of 675.
That's a little high.
What'd they do in June? They were
17 and 8, I think.
So 17 and 25 is 680 win percentage.
That's too high.
I'm going to trash it too. I'll say 91.
I was going to say 90.
Either way, they win the division.
Yep. They're going to win the division. They're going to win 90 games, but I think that's a little lofty on the percentages.
You know one game one race that we have not looked at this year and we shouldn't have? This is not our fault at all. The bye.
Oh.
The bye. Top two division leaders with a bye. Astros trail that one. They trail Cleveland by 10 games.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get it.
I mean, they were down 10 games with Seattle a couple weeks ago. And look, they've already closed the gap there. No, that does seem a little bit lofty.
Yeah.
So looking at a wild card series, if they win the division, we're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Yes, we are.
All right, that does it for Cash 'em or Trash 'em. If the Rockets do nothing else the rest of the offseason, are they better than they were last year? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If I have some Ginobin tonight, even though I've had it for the last 35 nights, will it taste better tonight than it did the previous nights before? Yes, it will. Recency bias, and it's the next one. It's always the most important. Ginobin's the best, too, so there's that added caveat. The vodka, the gin, straight bourbon whiskey, cask-strength bourbon, it's all top shelf with Ginobin. And it starts with the finest ingredients, classic, time-honored distilling methods. Ginobin uses their revolutionary technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits you'll ever taste. The Prosado technology. One of the things you'll love that's not in Ginobin are the harsh solvents. These are nasty elements. They don't belong in your spirits, and they don't in Ginobin. Anytime I've talked to somebody like, hey, you were right about Ginobin, I know I was. You got to try it yourself, too, if you haven't already, because once you try it, it's going to be your favorite. You get all the flavor, none of the burn, unparalleled smoothness, and an enjoyable drinking experience. When you go to the restaurant for dinner, ask for it. When you're going to the bar, ask for it. If you're going to the liquor store, pick up Ginobin. If you're looking for some weekend plans, how about going to the Ginobin tasting room in Alvin? You can see how they distill it. You can take a little tour, and then you can have some great Ginobin, great spot to watch a game to. Wall-to-wall TVs there. And there's also a Ginobin bar inside of Minute Maid Park. That's right. If you're going to an Astros game soon, stop by the Ginobin bar just to the left of the Crawford boxes and pick up some bourbon or whiskey or vodka or gin as you head down to your seats. Or if you just want to stay at home, I don't blame you. It's hot outside. Go to Ginobin.com. You can order straight from the website. Ginobin.com. Add the vodka, add the gin, add the bourbon, add the whiskey to your cart, and then have it delivered straight to your doorstep. Ginobin.com. Ginobin, all of the flavor, none of the burn. If the Rockets do nothing else this offseason, which kind of likely, I think they're already close to maxed out on roster spots. If the Rockets do nothing else, are they better than they were last year?
I personally think so. I think so because of the fact that you added a guy that was the perfect fit with the need that was there in Reed Sheppard that has the potential to do a whole lot for you in a draft that was pretty poor. And really, you had to roll the dice on a lot of guys developing. I think Shepard's a guy that's got enough skill that even if he doesn't become like a superstar-type player, he's exactly what you need right now. And I think the bigger thing is another year of this coaching staff with the guys that they currently have, the young players that they currently have, they're only going to get better. I think that you're going to see more development from Alpi. You hope to see more from Jalen. But we already saw enough in Amen Thompson's 1 year that you believe with this coaching staff and him getting, you know, just more comfortable with the league and the team, he's going to get better. Same thing with Cam Whitmore. Getting Tari Eason back, they're better. I think that they're going to be better from the standpoint of the development of each individual player playing the system that this coaching staff puts on the floor.
Yeah, even if Reed Sheppard gives them nothing, which I don't think will be the case, but even if he gives them nothing, I expect the Rockets to finish with a winning record next year. 41-41 last year, I think they'll have a winning record. I think the goal for them should be play-in tournament, mm-hmm. and better. You know, if they miss the play-in tournament because they made the playoffs altogether, well, that's great. That's bonus. But above 500 play-in tournament, that's one rung up the Western Conference standings. And how they're going to get there even without additional additions, most of their players are young, and your best players and your leading scorers are young. Alpi Şengün, Jalen Green. Alpi Şengün, had an incredible improvement from 2 years ago to last year. They're also in their second year of Ime Udoka. Like, you're going to be better in a second year in a system than your first year. You have a year of development. You have a year of maturation. You have a year of progressing and getting better. So many young players that should be better in another year in the NBA and in the second year with Ime Udoka should lead to a better record. Also, you're adding guys that were hurt last year. And yes, injuries happen in sports, so you can't prevent injuries happening next year. But Tari Eason, who I think is a critical player on this team, not a starter, but a critical role player on this team, played almost not at all last season. Alpi Şengün missed the last, 18 games for the Houston Rockets. Now, they did play pretty well in the games that he was out. But yeah, I have the Rockets being above 500 next year if they do literally nothing else this offseason.
Now, let me ask you this, because I had this discussion going with a buddy of mine this morning. And it's kind of similar to discussions we've had when it relates to the Texans in the fact that if your schedule's tougher. But can the Rockets have the same record as a year ago, dare I say worse, but at least 500? They're 500. They don't make the playoffs. they don't even make the play-in, but you're better because of the fact that your players developed more and the team developed. It's just that the West is so loaded.
Well, the schedule should be about that. I mean, the schedule is the same.
Yeah, but I'm saying from the schedule, we had this conversation with the Texans as it related to schedule. My conversation is more from the Western Conference perspective. It's so loaded down, and they're getting better with a lot of the moves that you're seeing, with the exception of the Clippers. The Pelicans got better. You believe Memphis is going to be better with John Morant, and they weren't in it last year, that you can continue to gel as a unit. Your young players continue to develop and get better. But overall, the results from a team perspective aren't going to be as good because of the juggernaut in the West.
I would say no in this case because the schedule is the same. Barring injury, and injuries are going to make you worse. I say no. Like I don't. If you finish below 500, next year's a disappointment. It's a major disappointment. Now, if you had injury along the way that led to that record, okay, now it's more allowable. Now it's more tolerable. Context matters here, but it'd still be a disappointment. If the Rockets finish with a below 500 record next year, it would be a major disappointment because you feel like you took that next step last year. You want to grow off of that mm-hmm. because you have young players. Yeah, if they finish below 500, next year is a loss.
Yeah, I just had the vision that they were going to go 41-41-ish again, but that regardless of even if they don't make the playoffs, that they could be better because you see Amen Thompson continuing to get better. You see Cam Whitmore really coming into his own.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they're in ball games. They're not getting their doors blown off, but they're playing Luka and the Mavs now that they have Clay, and they're playing the teams that I mentioned already, but still Denver, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and the top teams in the West. And you're going, man, I mean, at the end of the year, those teams are all going to have really good records, I would assume, to where you might get bumped down with the improvement of a New Orleans and some of the other teams, but that doesn't necessarily mean you took a step back.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because, I mean, you lived that this year. You lived that experience with all those teams this year. I don't think that those teams that were below you are going to be teams that take that step up. And there's teams ahead of you that could be taking a step back. Like, what is Golden State going to do? Not that Klay Thompson's like this huge, big name, whatever, for you. I could see a scenario where they miss the playoffs and have a better record. I could see them going 44-38 and having a better record than they were last year, but still missing the playoffs or missing the play-in. I could see that scenario, and I could believe that they were better based on that scenario. But, yeah, if they finish below 500 next year, I don't think that they improved at all. I think they took a step back.
I was thinking about just an even 500, but if they're a couple games over but they miss the playoffs, I still think that there's a way for me to feel like they've made progress and they're a better team. Because of the reasons that I mentioned, because I think as long as this coaching staff continues to work with these younger guys,
mm-hmm.
you're going to see them really start, you know, taking shape as to your rotation, who's going to step up, who's going to be more of a star type player, and be more impactful.
I mean, there were only four Western Conference teams below you, and you were ahead of them by a lot. Like, you were 10 games better than Utah. If they jumped you, that would be a disappointment. Now, Memphis is getting Jaw back, so they're much different. But you were
Brandon Clark.
You were 14 games better than Memphis. You were 19 games better than San Antonio, and you were 20 games better than Portland. Like, those teams should not be jumping you. Even Memphis, in my opinion, shouldn't be jumping you. And there's teams ahead of you that I think you could pass. I think Golden State's a team that you could pass. Their best players are getting older. I know that they're going to try to reload and try to extend that window, but I think you could be better than Golden State. Sacramento? Meh.
I don't.
New Orleans? I mean, if they trade Ingram and Zion gets hurt. And then the Lakers? I mean, I don't know what the Lakers are going to look like with a new head coach and, you know, LeBron a year older and not adding. Like, they're in the market for DeRozan, but
mm-hmm.
And they Dalton Connect was a sneaky. I don't know if it was sneaky. It was kind of a steal with where you were drafting, mm-hmm. but I mean, I could see the Lakers going the other way.
See, I don't think that the Lakers are going to try everything in their power. They're in just go for it
sure.
mode to where they're just going to. I think they're going to try and look at both LaVine and DeRozan, and they're going to try and explore every option to just go, you know, completely, you know, hell bent on being better. I think Golden State, is Lauri Markkanen a guy that makes them that much better? They're trying to make a move for him. Maybe not. Memphis is when I forgot Bain. When you add Bain and Ja and Clark back on that roster, I think Memphis is a playoff caliber team. I think they're a team that's going to be better than they were a year
ago. Better than the Rockets?
I think they are.
Of those four teams, Utah, Memphis, San Antonio, Portland, that would potentially jump Houston, I would agree that Memphis has the best chance.
Yeah, I mean, and they're trying to make moves to even, you know, and Jaren Jackson Jr., and they've got a lot of talent on that team to where I think they're more polished to be a better team than the Rockets next season. But the other three, I agree with you. I don't care about Chris Paul and San Antonio, and I think they're going to trade him before the deadline if he plays anywhere decently at all.
I think that's all about tutelage.
No doubt.
It's all about tutelage there. 8-3-4-1, I think the Rockets can win 9 more games. I think maybe 52? 50 is in the equation. I think like 5 games is like the improvement. Maybe they can get to like 47, 48. I don't think they win 50 games.
No, I don't either.
I think they can get to 47, 48. I think 50 is still out of the equation because of the difficulty of the Western. If they were in the East, I think they could win 50.
I think that 44 is where I could see their ceiling being in and around 44 games. But I'm curious what the over-under is going to be going into the season.
Same. Yeah.
I think it's going to be at around
40. I would have it at 40? Mm-hmm. I'm taking the over on that. I would have it at 44, 44 and a half is where I would place it.
I think Vegas is going to put it more at 40, 41.
If it's under 500, I'm jumping on it. 6860, Rockets need a star. What they have will not win unless someone takes a huge step. Do you see that happening?
Not this year.
Someone taking a huge step.
Oh, I could see. I'm bullish on Cam Whitmore. I think Cam Whitmore is a guy. I like both guys from last year. I like Amen and I like Cam. But I think offensively, because you don't know if Amen's ever going to get a trustworthy jumper to go in, whereas I think Cam's all about defense and effort, and you can get that from him. He's got all the tools, I think, for sure.
The part that I like about them keeping all their young players is because sometimes player development's a crapshoot. Like, you never know who's going to explode and who's going to be the next star. So keeping all of them together, if two of them pop off and develop into stars, well, you have your two. And it could be any of them. It could be Alpi. It could be Jalen. It could be Jabari. It could be Amin. It could be Cam Whitmore. It could be Reed Sheppard. So, like, that's why I like them keeping the young core of players together, is because you increase your probability of one or two of the young players blooming into a star, where if you traded three of them for a star, the star turns out to be a bust. Oh, no, we traded the wrong three. You're in deep doo-doo. So that's why I like that they keep the young guys together. They're not all going to blossom.
Nope.
All the core seven or whatever we're calling, they're not all going to blossom. But if two of them blossom into stars, it could be any of the seven that do, well, that's a win.
Yeah, I think they can blossom into even role players.
Sure.
But I think that you're right. I think that the longer you can push the cart down the road without having to commit long-term big money and max money to anybody, the more chances it'll shake out for you to who's going to be your role players, who's going to be your significant star type players. And there's a possibility that the two guys that are coming up first might not either be the guy that ends up being the superstar of the bunch, but they could be really good. And we've seen that with Alpi.
Last night, the U.S. men's national team loses to Uruguay. Probably the Panama loss is what really gave them the raw deal, the reason that they didn't advance in Copa America. Everybody's crushing the U.S. men's national team. They're crushing Greg Berhalter. We're going to talk to Glenn Davis. Soccer matters. You can listen to it here Monday, Wednesdays on ESPN 97.5. Glenn's going to give us the lowdown on what went wrong with the U.S. men's national team in Copa America. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.